I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, I'm Claire from Wild Ginger Running, the trail and ultra running YouTube channel, and this is the podcast version of my weekly live chat with an athlete, coach, or other running expert. The link to the original film on YouTube is in the show notes. Check out my Instagram and YouTube channel for more training advice, inspiration, and gear reviews. Everything is Wild Ginger Running, and my blog is wildgingerrunning.co.uk. Support me on Patreon if you enjoy this free advice at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Enjoy this podcast and see you next week for more. Hello everybody, welcome to Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. I'm delighted tonight to be live with a completer of the MDS, a completer of 102 mile Cotswold Way Ultra. She's a mum of four, she's a gran of two, and she's the co-founder of Black Trail Runners. Big round of applause for Sabrina Pace Humphreys. Woo! How are you tonight, Sabrina? It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me to be on. I'm feeling really, really good because today we exchanged on our house and I've been living in temporary accommodation now at my in-laws for almost 2 months, and just to exchange on the house knowing that we're going to complete at the beginning of January is like the best Christmas present ever. So I'm feeling really good. I started out the day with a 6:30 a.m. 14 miler.
Wow.
In the rain, and that, yeah, it kind of set me up for the day. It's been a good day. It's been one of the good ones.
Awesome. So your new place, is that like quite near, because you're based, is it in Gloucestershire that you're based? Are you moving in a similar area? Will it still be good for running, trail running?
It's going to be great for running. So where I'm moving to is a total reno project. Needs loads and loads of work, but it is nearer to Stroud than we've lived previously. And it's just still got, even today when I was running, I was saying to some of my running buddies, oh, this will be my new kind of entry and exit into the trails. And oh my God, I've got to get up this hill in order to get home.
Yeah.
But it was really, really important to me that I stayed around the area because I love the trails in this area, and my children are at school here, so I was never going to move anywhere too far away. But having access to good trails, I'm so fortunate, and I know we're going to talk about Black Trail Runners later, but I'm so fortunate that from the age of two I've lived in or around this area, and we have some of the best trails that are out there. So yes, that was definitely ticking the box for the house. Has to be good access to trails.
Yes, some good trails, definitely. I hear you, definitely, for that, for sure. And so you have done some incredible races in your time. And obviously, you just said about Black Trail Runners, you're doing loads to promote and encourage more diversity in trail running. But first of all, I just want to know a little bit of a rewind. What's your history like? How did you come to trail and ultra running in the first place?
Well, I hated running.
Yeah, I hated running.
I'm not the kind of person that was like really good at running at school, you know, went to various athletics clubs. I hated running. I hated running outdoors, but I really hated running on treadmills in gyms. And as you said, I have four children. So 11 years ago, I used my pregnancies as a real excuse to eat. I'm an eater. I love eating. Oh, yeah. I love all kinds of food. So when I was pregnant, I was like, wow, I'm growing a baby. I'm growing a human. What can I eat to facilitate this growth? So with my last pregnancy, I ended up putting on 5 stone.
Wow. And,
yeah, a lot of weight. And I also was diagnosed with postnatal depression.
Oh, no.
And the doctor that I went to see, I mean, I have a history of kind of depression and mental health issues anyway, but the doctor that I went to see said one of the things that I could do for myself was to exercise, do something. He said something like jogging. And I was like, oh, my God, I hate jogging. And like, I tell a story about the first run I went out on. You know, I had a baggy T-shirt on. I had like basketball boots, really baggy trousers, and I went and I found the most secluded spot that I could find where people wouldn't see me, and I literally did half a mile and thought I was gonna die. And I honestly, like, my story is not one of like I started running and I, like, it took a while for me to find the love that every time I went out I felt a little bit better about myself and my mental health. I felt that I could see a little bit more light in what was a really, really dark time. And how I got into, so I was a road runner for years and, you know, like, built myself up. And then when I knew my 40th birthday was coming, I had given up drinking alcohol because that was no good for me. And I was like, what can I do that will really kind of celebrate being 40 and celebrate 40 years on this earth and kind of can be something that is a real physical and mental challenge as well. And then I sat down and was flicking through channels and I saw this documentary about this crazy race called the Marathon des Sables. And kind of like found myself, actually I'm writing about it at the moment for the book that I'm working on, which I'll tell you about later, but I found myself lured into wanting to do something that I really did not think I could do. And that's where my trail running journey began, because before then I had never run trails, I'd never run in the sand, never run in the heat, never, like, stayed away from anything that wasn't tarmac. And training for the Marathon des Sables forced me to trail run, because I had to find trails in the UK that kind of mimic the Marathon Day, like the Sahara Desert, which was really quite difficult.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't believe that I hadn't experienced trail running before that, because I loved it from day one.
Had you done hiking? Like you said, like you lived in Gloucestershire all your life. You hadn't done hiking?
Yeah. No, because I come from a family, like, we weren't a sporty family. Like, we were poor. We were that wasn't in our DNA as a family to hike or to walk, or like, we had bikes, but we would never go out onto the hills and stuff. It just wasn't what we did. It's I see families nowadays, I see, you know, I'll be out running and I'll see families walking and I'll be like, oh, that looks so cool. But we never did that as kids. Like, that's not what we did down our road. You know, we just would go outside and play Frio or British Bulldogs, you know.
Yeah.
So it was this whole new experience. And as I say, the first run that I did, which was a trail run, and it was on a bit of a Cotswold Way, I can remember, which was near me. And I was like, where have you been all my life? Like, where? Because it just, it was so good for this runner. It was so good for my mental health. And I saw and experienced things on the trails that I had never experienced in road running. And I was just like hooked, just hooked from day one. It made the whole training, the hard training for the Marathon des Sables, it made it so enjoyable, at times just bearable, but something that every day I went out, I wanted to go out because I wanted to explore new trails and find new bits and see new vistas. And I have so much love for trail running for the management of mental health. And I just now I do road, you know, if I have to train on the road, I'm just like, ugh. Yeah.
It's just a trudge, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a total trudge. Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody listening to this on this channel will be agreeing with you there. And I just want to give you a little sense of who's watching live just now, because we've got tons of people watching live. So I'll just do a little shout out to everybody so you can see who there is. So Seb says, hey. Matt H says, hey. Brad Rush is watching from over in the United States. That's fantastic. Maeve O'Reilly, she's watching from Ireland. And Flo Maskell as well. Just read out a few there. And I know you've got a ton of kids. How did you fit the whole training thing in around the children? That's always something that people want loads of tips on. So have you got any sort of little secrets you can share from that?
You know, it's so funny. We were having this when I was out with some running buddies this morning. I was up at, and I've always done this. So the only way, when I was training for the Marathon des Sables, I was running my own public relations business.
Oh, wow.
So I was working full time as well. My husband was kind of just starting his kind of freelance mortgage broker. So basically I go out super early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way that I could fit in my training for any of the big races that I do, where you're accruing big mileage, or you're going up to a big mileage week. And the only way that you can fit that mileage is to maybe incorporate longer runs in midweek as well. I just would get up and go out. You know, I would, some days I, from MDS, I remember that I would be out at like 5 a.m.
Wow.
With a head torch on, you know, so that I could do my run do my session, and I could be back for like 7:30 when the kids woke up, sort out the kids, give them breakfast, get them to school. And then sometimes I would try and, if I had to make it up, then like make it up after they went to school and then work a little bit later, because my husband was at home, so he could make tea. I had to be so organized, like regimented organized. But ultimately how I fitted it in, and especially that Sunday long run, or like the double long runs I would do on a Saturday and Sunday, I would just get up super, super early and do it. Because what I found is that I'm always better in the morning. I'm always better at doing my runs in the morning. I always get really, really tired in the afternoon. I have like slumps, etc., etc. I'm also perimenopausal now, so that's like something else to worry about.
Yeah.
So it's early morning running,
yeah,
and also being super organized in terms of looking at what the plan is like for the next couple of weeks, and thinking, okay, what does my life look like? How am I going to fit that session in that doesn't impact on what the kids need to do, but will give me like a quality session if I need it? So I'm not worrying about having to like rush home to go to. So it's really about a lot of forward planning, and ultimately being an early morning person.
Yeah. And we've got a comment on the live chat. Leon says, yeah, same here. I do my long runs. He has to be back by 9 a.m. On the weekends. Yeah. So if it's a really long run, he's got to get up really early to be
ready for his kids. Say, well, how do you do that? You know, how do you kind of condition yourself to do that? And I'm super organized the night before. I get lay out on my kit. I get my drinks ready. I get my fuel ready. So all I really need to do when I wake up is wake up, brush my teeth, have an espresso or a double espresso, get my kit on and go. So it's almost I'm out before I can even process that I'm out.
There's no decision to be made. There's no faffing.
There's no faffing. Make the process as simple as possible in order to get out. Once you're out, you're out. But yeah, I mean, that's how as a working mum that I still to this day deal with training.
Wow, that's amazing. And Seb on the live chat says, major respect for everybody who successfully juggles running family life and a job. Definitely. You've got to be really driven, haven't you? So did you on the MDS, like, how did you feel completing that race? Because, like, did you always think, oh, yeah, I can do this? Or was there ups and downs?
Oh, God, no. So much about doing a race like MDS is just getting to the start line. And because so many people don't get there. So many people don't make the start line of big races, not just MDS. You know, you're training for a massive race. It might be UTMB or Transvolcania, or you might be doing an FKT or attempting your own personal FKT. And so much relies on having, like, a good training block. So I've always had issues with my ankles, with ankle strength. So I would keep going over on my ankle, and then I'd be like, my God, if I keep going over on my ankle here, then I could do some serious damage. So I was, like, seeing a physio and doing my strength and conditioning. And so many times I thought, my God, like, am I even going to make it to the start line? It was never guaranteed, and it's not guaranteed. Even a couple of days before, when we were getting all of our kit together and getting ready to get on the train to get to Gatwick, people that I knew were pulling out because they'd gone down with flu, or they'd gone down with, you know, so it was never guaranteed. Until you're on that start line, it's not guaranteed. So being on the start line was like, so many thoughts, like, you know, what am I doing here? I can't believe I'm on the start line of, you know, the toughest foot race on earth, as it's marketed, you know, and everyone's got their view on that. But, you know, it all comes down to your training, whether it is really, really, really tough for you, or whether it's not so tough, but it's still tough. So just getting to the start line for someone like me, who is a normal, non-talented person, you know, I just do the little bit, do the work bit by bit. It was out of this world for me. So to finish it after 6 days, to actually look down upon, you know, look through the kind of heat rising from the ground and see, like, is that the finish line? And because you think your eyes, you know, you've seen so many, you've had so many hallucinations along the way, and you know, and all of the stuff with the long stage and everything like that, and to actually see it and to know that it was real, I broke down. I mean, I'd held it together for 5 days, and I was just all over the place. But to have that medal put round my neck by Patrick Bauer, who's the daddy of MDS, he invented it, he's there every year. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life, and it holds such a beautiful place in my heart. And I felt that everything that I'd wanted to celebrate 40 years on earth was there in that moment. I felt proud of my physical ability to do it. I felt proud of my mental, the work that I've done on my mental health in order to believe that I could achieve it. And so grateful to everyone that enabled me on my journey there, the community. It was so special, and I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I saw a photo of you on the finish line, and you're hugging someone, and you're just like welling up. Oh, okay, yes. I couldn't see who the person was because your face is there. But yeah, oh, it's just such a lovely photo. There's so much emotion in your face, and you look tired, but you look ecstatic, you look happy, you look emotional. It's everything is there.
I think that was it. It was kind of like, because I had friends who were there that had to pull out. So I'd gone to Lanzarote training camp earlier in the year and met a lovely bunch of people. And one of those guys, he had to be pulled out of MDS because he was having trouble with his heart. And it really kind of, like, everyone that knew him was just, like, really low about it. Like, oh, my God, is he okay? Because the thing is, when you pull out of a race like that, you don't get to keep anything. Like, they have to, because they have to look after the people that are there that are still racing. If you pull out, they basically get you to the nearest hospital, which for him was in Casablanca, and then you're left to your own devices.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You're not looked after by anyone. They drop you there, and then your medical insurance has to kick in, and you have to, so, and you don't get to keep anything. You don't get to keep any of the memorabilia. You're stripped of your numbers, your water, ration, everything. So just to like be able to cross the finish line and get to keep everything and then get the medal was just like, I'm gonna have these memories forever. But you also remember, and you also remember the people that maybe that you knew that didn't make it because it just wasn't their time. And you're kind of doing that for them as well. So it's so special. Anyone that's completed a race that means so much to them knows that feeling, you know, knows that feeling of actually crossing the line and knowing I've done this.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you said that in order to actually get there and do the training and get onto that start line and then the finish line, that you had to go through quite a lot of kind of quite deep personal development in terms of anxiety, because it's really strange to think like a person as like as passionate, as open, as exciting as you could have any problems with anxiety at all. But I read in another interview that you suffered from anxiety, but you've devised a 10-step strategy to use it kind of to your advantage to fuel not only running challenges but like the whole of life as well. So I just wondered if you can share a little bit of that strategy with us, so that anybody else who's suffering in the same way can kind of take that on board and try it out for themselves maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that, and it's something that I say to people and that people still say to me, because I still suffer with anxiety. I still have mental health. I still suffer with mental health illness that I live with and that I live with daily. And I have great days and I have not so great days. And I think one of the things that I share via my Instagram account is everything, you know, because I think that it's really easy for people to think, oh, she must not, or they, people like that must not suffer. And it's like, we do, but we found a way to channel that, a way to live with it and a way to use it. And it's what I've done with Anxiety to Accomplishment, the 10-step strategy that I use, but that now other people use as well. And it's around knowing that you have issues like anxiety or depression, but rather than being a barrier to you achieving success or achieving a goal, actually using some of the symptoms that you deal with as a way in order to channel it. So for example, one thing that is the first thing that I know I need to do when I feel highly anxious or I feel that I'm having an episode of depression coming on is to focus on something, because there are so many thoughts when you're anxious, so many thoughts are going through your mind all the time, and it almost can cause you to just freeze and not do anything. That's how my anxiety manifests. It's I can't have clarity of thought because there are so many thoughts that I feel paralyzed. So one of the things that I did, it came about when I was training for MDS, is that, and I use MDS as an example, is that I had to get really, really focused in terms of what is it that I really want to do. Do I want to complete MDS, which you can do if you just walk it, or do I want to compete? And I had to be really, really focused on what I wanted that goal to be, because until I knew how I wanted to tackle MDS, I couldn't even think about how I was going to train for it. So it's like breaking, knowing what your goal is. And sometimes that goal, it doesn't need to be doing something like MDS. It can be something as simple as like, what am I going to have for dinner tonight? You know, I've been there. It's like you're so consumed with anxiety, or you're having you're going through an episode of depression where you can't even think what you're going to do tomorrow. So this can be used for everything. So step one is to get really, really focused on what it is you want to achieve. What is it that I want? What does that look like? You know, watch videos on it, read books on it, talk to people that have done it if it's like some kind of adventure or race, but get really, really clear in your head with visualization, etc., exactly what it is you want. And then The other strategies are to commit. That's a massively scary thing, especially if you're dealing with anxiety and depression. Is like, oh my God, I want to commit, but then I don't want to. Or is it expensive? Do I need to outlay money to do it? Do I need to get someone else involved? But for me, especially because I designed this when I was doing MDS, it's like, until I committed financially to MDS, it felt like a pipe dream. It felt like something that other people did. So I knew, I was like, what can I do in order to make this real? And I had to commit to it. And that was committing to it by putting down the deposit and registering for the year I wanted to do. It was committing to it by thinking, I can't do this alone. I need to be coached. Who do I think would be a good person to, and starting to talk to them. So I was coached by Elizabeth Barnes.
So, wonderful. Yeah,
But I knew that I wanted to compete. So I knew that I wanted to be coached by someone who had been there, done that, got the t-shirt, someone that understood my family commitments. So that was like another commitment for me. And then massive, and what I've said to you is like about creating that support network around you. So creating your tribe, as I call them.
Yeah.
And the tribe, I talk about like the power of five. So within the tribe, it's important to have like a cheerleader, mm-hmm. you know, so, and also then someone that's been there, done that, got the t-shirt, which was Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Someone that you will tell you how it is, warts and all. So someone that can be really, really honest with you. It's important to have, surround yourself with a community of people that are doing something that is similar to you. So for me, it was like my MDS templates, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's important, and I pick five people because I believe that in order to accomplish that community, those people are so important to that process. And then we go on to like plan and do. So it's breaking it down into small, measurable chunks that you can achieve and get that adrenaline rush from actually achieving something and then moving on. Because thinking about these massive things, especially when you suffer with anxiety, if you think about the big thing, you'll be like, no, there's no way I can do that. So you've got to plan and do in little chunks. And then about, it's easy to think I'm just going to quit, especially again, if you're of that mindset where it's like, it's too much, it's too much, it's too much. So there has to be a period of reflection on what you're doing, how far you've come, why, what are those underlying feelings that are making you think, I just don't know if I can do this. I think I'm just going to quit. It's too hard. So there's the reflective process there. And then I talk about the power of actually what I found really brings me into a state of wanting to accomplish again is moving my arse. So it is actually the power of exercise, any form of exercise, in order to reinvigorate, in order to, you know, we all have those days where we are feeling like, oh, I don't want to go out. I don't want to go out and run. I don't want to go out and do that. But actually just like 10, 15 minutes of doing something which raises your heart rate can just give you the feel good. You know, you want that dopamine. So I talk about the power of actually using exercise as a way to just reinvigorate yourself. Creating space, which is all about meditation, reflection, writing down your goals, etc., etc. Getting comfortable being really uncomfortable. We've all been there, putting yourself in situations where you're like, this is horrible, you know. And I did it when I went over to Lanzarote. I went over my ankle on the first day of a training camp. I was like, oh, this is not a good place to be. Had to get really uncomfortable being uncomfortable physically, getting uncomfortable being uncomfortable mentally, you know. Doing ultra races for me as preparation for MDS, which was really, really important. And, you know, going long, going through the night, running through the, you know, all of those things that as runners we are fearful of. Putting yourself in as close a situation to that as possible so that when it actually comes, you're equipped to deal with it. Replenishment, so that's about treating yourself, remembering all your wins and giving yourself, whether it's a pair of running shoes, whether it's a chocolate bar, and then ultimately accomplishing and you know, achieving that. So these are all things that in the process of MDS that I had to do, because I was wrapped with that feeling of that devil on my shoulder, which told me who are you to be doing this? You know, who are you to be trying to do the toughest foot race on earth? And when I'm really struggling to live with my mental health, those voices get really loud, and they want me to stop. So it was really, really important for me and others like me to have a system, a kind of almost like a workbook that we can use in order to smash, because I have, using this, I've smashed goals that I've set myself, where before I would have given up halfway, or I would have been like, it's too much. Sometimes these things feel too much, and life is hard, and we're coming to the end of 2020, and Lord knows we have been through it, all of us, you know. And I think that a lot of us are really burnt out, you know, mentally burnt out, maybe overtrained, because we've used our running as a way to kind of escape what's going on, and we're kind of going into 2021 just feeling a bit tired, a bit unsure as to what races are going to be on if we're runners, or what's my life going to look like, what's my job going to look like. And I think that it's really, really important to have something that that you can focus on, and it doesn't need to be massive. And if this helps, then great, but it's whatever works for you. But it certainly works for me, and it brings me back, and it makes me accountable, and it reminds me of the things that I need to do in order to work with my symptoms of anxiety to bring out the best in myself.
Yeah, it sounds really grounding. Yeah, like just like calming and grounding. And Arlene M on the live chat says inspiring, great suggestions as well. So there's a lot there that's incredible. Well, there is 10 things, but I was just wondering, do you have like a blog or something where it's listed, or do you do talks? Yeah, further?
Yeah, so I do talks on it. It's also available as a course via Teachable. So what I'll do is I'll send you the link. So if anyone wants to try a week for free, I'm more than happy to let your viewers try a week for free. And then if they like it, they can sign up and get the kind of rest of the 9 weeks, because the course itself comes with videos, worksheets, etc., etc. So it's a course in itself that you can kind of follow and do. And once you have it, you can kind of, it's yours forever, so you can use it obviously for any goal that you want to accomplish. So
fantastic, that is brilliant to know. And so if you send me that link, I'll put it in the film description in YouTube, and I'll make this into a podcast either later tonight or tomorrow morning, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. So that is fantastic to know. That's great, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Sabrina. That is absolutely awesome. And now we'll come on to another of your amazing achievements, which is the co-founding of Black Trail Runners. And we've got before we start talking about that, do you know Sabrina Virgie by any chance, or do you know her?
I know of her. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I know of her. I've been following Sabrina, you know, through you, through the work that you've done as well. But I was coached. My mountain running coach is Damien Hall. He told me about Sabrina first, and then I kind of followed some of the stuff that she'd done, obviously the Pennine Way stuff and the Wainwright stuff. And now that I'm an Innovate Ambassador, I spent some time with Paul Tierney. Oh. So I learned more about the Wainwrights when I was with him, and he was telling me about kind of Sabrina as well. So I haven't met her and we haven't spoke, but I hope to remedy that early in the new year.
Yeah, well, I think she's going to go for the Wainwrights again in May. So fingers crossed that we can join her and like help out a little bit. So maybe you'll get a chance to meet her there. But it's just funny because John Airy, one of my patrons, says, it's not really a question, but how come we have two awesome female runners called Sabrina? I might have to consider a name change. So there must be something about the name Sabrina that makes you a really badass runner.
You know what, I would never, you know, what Sabrina Virgie is doing is just so inspiring as a woman runner, as a woman of color, as a runner. So now in running circles, it's like, Sabrina, oh, what? Like, as in the same spelling as Sabrina Virgie? But I used to get, like Sabrina, or like the Teenage Witch.
Teenage Witch. It's a lovely name. I love the name Sabrina.
It's a beautiful name, and it's Anglo-Saxon. It's the name of the goddess of the River Severn. She was called Sabrina.
Oh, lovely. Both goddesses for sure. Yeah, I love the name. I used to love Sabrina the Teenage Witch as well. I love that show.
Me too.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, back to Black Trail Runners then. So what are your aims with the Black Trail Runners? And what was your motivation to setting it up?
I think that my motivation to want to, so our aim is to encourage and enable more Black people into trail running, into UK trail running as number one, into global trail running as a close second, because there isn't enough representation of Black people in trail running, full stop. You know, you look at the famous trail runners, there are no Black famous trail runners. You know, we interviewed in the Black Trail Runners podcast called The Checkpoint Corey Waltering, who's a North Face athlete. But there is a real lack of representation of Black people in trail running, and it's something that hasn't been addressed. When the George Floyd murder and the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, who was a runner, who was murdered while he was out running, and Breonna Taylor, and we had the uprising in the Black Lives Matters and the protests around the world, I very much looked at my running as my passion, and the question which I often thought when I was at races is, where are the people that look like me? Where are the people, where are the Black people? Where are the, you know, there's been so much talk over the years of women in trail running or women in ultra running, and how do we increase participation? But there haven't been real talk or real work in terms of how do we increase participation of Black people in trail running? Because it hadn't been, you know, because it hadn't been something that'd been looked at. But then when Black Lives Matter happened, you had, you know, Blackout Tuesday. Yeah. And you had a lot of sports brands that made a pledge to do more to encourage more diversity, do more in order to understand why Black people aren't represented in their marketing, or aren't represented at the races they sponsor, or aren't represented at boardroom level. And this is a real problem, because you can't be who you can't see. You can't be who you can't see. And if you go to a race, you go to a mountain race, you go to a trail race, or you want to enter a race and you look on a website, and you don't see, even in pictures, people that look like you, it makes you think, maybe this isn't a place for people like me. And that's not true. That can't be true. So I spoke about that, and I heard one of my co-founders, Sunny Peart, who had done a podcast interview for Centurion Running, and he was talking about the same stuff, and talking about he'd done an audit of brands, and one of the only races he could find that had representation of a Black person was a race in which you can be chained to a partner to do an ultra.
And coincidentally awful,
isn't it? This is what we're dealing with. And so Sunny and I had a discussion, and then we spread the net to other Black runners that we knew, and outdoor and outdoor specialists that were talking about the same things. We're talking about the lack of skills, access, and representation of Black people in the outdoors. So seven of us got together, and we co-founded Black Trail Runners in July, and it has flown. It has grown. We're a campaigning and community group. So community in terms of creating a really, really safe space for Black runners and white allies to communicate about their experiences on trails. So we have a private Facebook group where we share pictures and videos of trail runs we do. We have started to host online events. So last night we had a navigation for trail runners workshop that we did online in association with Innovate. We had our first Black Trail Runners Trail Taster Weekend in September in Wendover Woods. Yeah. We've got the second one in January in the Malverns. We're talking to the Outrunners Charity, which is a charity that works with Black youth, about doing grassroots events to get kids on trails. We launched the podcast. So we want to address the barriers to, of which are the three kind of linchpins really of what we do, or the three tenets, is around access. How do Black people access the countryside, access trails, and feel safe there and feel that this is a place for them? And that's around what's around them. You know, Black people have been urbanized, you know, with the Windrush generation coming over. Black people were sent to rebuild cities after World War II. So Black people have been urbanized. When people think of Black, when the majority of white people think Black people, it's kind of where, you know, they think you think the word urban, you think Black. But actually, we need to reclaim the space, you know, and part of that is how can we get to those spaces and feel safe in those spaces. Skills is about, once we're in those spaces, how do we use those spaces? How do we run? Is there a different technique for trail running? What kit do you need? Navigation, food, nutrition, first aid, you know, all of these things that as trail runners we know that, you know, we know that you need. But actually, if you're a Black person and you've only ever run on the road, those are barriers to access, not knowing that skill orientated stuff. So that's another thing that we look at. And third and foremost, why I'm here, part of the reason that I'm here tonight, representation. It's about being out there, talking about trail running, talking about the mental health benefits that me as a Black woman, as a mixed race woman who from being a kid was racialized as Black in the rural town that I live in, was told that I was other, was not given opportunities that my white friends were given, feels that, you know, feels the trauma of that lived experiences of dealing with racism. And trail running has been a godsend for giving me those moments of absolute clarity of mind, of a reason that I am here, of helping me to process, especially this year with BLM and with the work that we've been doing with Black trail runners, which is traumatic in itself in terms of hearing about our people's lived experiences, experiencing that ourselves, some of the negative feedback that we get from going out there and saying trail running in the UK needs to stand up and understand that there is this lack of diversity, and how are you going to work with organizations like us to address that? So, you know, we have to be out there. We have to be out there representing. We have to showcase Black trail runners that are out there representing. And that's why the Runners World cover was like such an important step forward in that. But that Runners World cover that I was on, that I still can't believe it.
It looks great.
It came from months of conversations with Runners World, and it came from basically me calling out Runners World, or me basically saying to Runners World, you know, you've used a photo of a Black person on the cover, and this is like a 5-year-old photo. Like, how is there no photos in your library of Black people running? Like, this is just
probably
crazy.
Not. Yeah, we didn't have any on Trail Running Magazine. It's really hard to find Black trail runners. And I was looking.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, the fact that there aren't should certainly raise, like, why don't we have these photos? Where are these people? Because, you know, we've been out there. Like, I've been out there for 5 years doing it, and as of my co-founders, it's the fact that it hasn't, the questions haven't been asked, the work hasn't been done in terms of how can we address this. So, you know, if you don't have photos of Black trail runners, it's like, why don't we have photos of Black trail runners? Because we maybe don't have links into the groups, the grassroots groups that go out there, or the people that are out there doing it who themselves have links. Well, how can we make that connection with those people? But ultimately, and Runners World were great about it. It's kind of, you know, the work has to start internally for these brands. Like, it has to start at boardroom level. So if you don't have Black people on your board, you don't have Black people as editors or editorial assistants, you don't have Black people as content producers, as social media managers, you're always going to be behind the curve. Because when you're having those editorial meetings, if it's a media, you're not getting the voice of Black people. You're not getting someone saying, oh, that's all well and good, but that's not how in our culture we would do it, or that's not going to appeal to a black person because we just wouldn't relate to that. So if you don't really strip it back and look at your organization, whether small or large, and whether you have a direct line or a direct relationship with black people, then you're always going to be behind the curve. So it has to start internally. The work has to start internally for us as individuals and at corporate level, because you have to, I always say in my work, you know, it's not enough just to say, well, I'm not racist. You have to be working to be anti-racist.
Yeah, you really do.
When it comes to trail running, it's like, it's not enough to say, oh, well, you know, we looked in our photo library and there's just no photos of black people, so we don't put black people in it. It's like, it's not kind of really good enough. It's like, we asked ourselves, we looked and we couldn't see, and we asked ourselves why. And we looked around us and we could see that we are all white people. And then we started to think, how can we create dialogue with people of colour who might be influencers, might have links into community groups? It's not difficult to find us, but that work has to be the work of the individual, you know, because we're not going to, you know, it's funny, you know, there's a crew, a London-based running crew called Run Dem Crew.
Yeah, and we had them on a photo shoot years ago, before this all happened as well.
Yeah, headed up with Charlie Dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about, you know, brands that reach out and kind of almost want the ED&I strategy written, like, for free. It's like, well, you should be doing this for us. And it's like, no. Like, the journey, the work has to be your work. We can assist you there, we can point you in the right direction, but we're not going to do it for you, you know. And I think with black trail runners, the reason that it's grown is because we are campaign led. So we started, our first campaign was to encourage race organizers in the UK to include ethnicity questions within their race data, because we knew there was a problem. We know there's a problem, we see it when we're racing, but without data, it's we know that it's difficult to get people, especially, you know, government, you know, policymakers, to listen to you. So we started to get that data in, and it's exactly as we thought, you know, 0.03% of participants are black in these trail races, you know, and the data is continually starting to come in now. And our second, and that was our first campaign, our second campaign, which is 21 in 21, which is about getting two events in the UK, as many black trail runners to these events, and working with event organizers in order to enable that to happen, by whether that is something as kind of monetary, kind of as discounts on race entries, or whether it is offering some free coaching to kind of help people feel confident in doing those events, or whatever it might be. We are aiming to, this year at the Ultra X England 125, there were four black trail runners, and that was there representing black trail runners, and that was the most that had been at any UK trail event, and that was four of us. At Maverick the other weekend, there was like eight of us.
Hey.
So again, like, do you know, and it's
working, it's slowly,
it's that, but it's always going to be, it was never going to be suddenly we have 1,000 black people in an event, but it is about getting the message out there, showing that we are running these races. Come join us, come be part of the community, it is safe, and banging the drum in terms of making, you know, in terms of just conveying that message that, you know, trail running has a problem with diversity and it needs to be addressed, and you know, women like you with your audience coming forward and asking, you know, and having me on to talk about it is part of it, because there will be a lot of white people out there that and, you know, some of the comments we get as well, running is for everyone, you know, that's the running's for everyone, or I don't see color. Well, no, you don't, because you're white and therefore you're represented. But when you are a person of color and you are in a race and you're not represented, of course you see color, and of course part of your thinking is, you know, it's just a feeling. It is a especially again if you're someone like me that suffers with anxiety, it's that, do I belong here? Should I be here? And it's the real experiences, which is one of my experiences, of being in a race, being in a very difficult situation, falling and not being helped by six runners that went past me, and asking yourself, asking yourself, you're in that situation, is it because of the color of my skin?
Yeah.
Is it that, or is it because I'm a woman?
All idiots that went
or
past.
Are they just, you know, because as trail runners, we know that, you know, we're told it in race briefings.
Yeah.
If you see a runner in distress, you stop, you help. That's your first thing.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, if you're still up for a time, you know, as long as you let the organisers know, they might give you an extra half an hour, whatever. We never leave a runner in distress.
No.
And that happened to me in the Alps last year. Happened to me. And I slipped and I was hanging onto the side of a snowfield, and six runners went past me. And
yeah, that's terrible. Like, whatever colour you are, it doesn't matter. You're a person that's fallen. I would have stopped.
Yeah,
but that's happened to me in races as well. I put my leg through a bridge thing, and several runners just ran straight past. I don't know if I wasn't making a fuss or something, but I was just like, thanks, they did run past me.
And
maybe it's because I'm ginger.
It's so kind of it's so soul destroying, but it's also so, you know, as a person of color, it's, you really do ask yourself, would I have gotten the help had I been blonde haired, blue eyed, white, you know, a white person? Is it why is it so much more important to get a time than it is to help a person, you know?
And just don't know, do you? Like, happened to me too, and I wouldn't be thinking that. I was just thinking, oh well, they're just idiots. Nothing to do with me.
Yeah, exactly. But that very much stayed with me, and it made me believe, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one having experienced this. It made me think, is this a safe space for me to be? Is trail running outside England, trail running, and is this a safe space for somebody like me to be because of the color of my skin? And we want to work on that, because that stuff, you know, we want to work to ensure, or to damn near ensure, that kind of stuff doesn't happen, and that Black people feel supported whatever race they do, wherever it is in the world, you know. And We strive for the day, you know, it's not about being divisive. We strive for the day that there would be no need for Black trail runners, because it wouldn't, there wouldn't be a need for it. We're a long way off from that, but that's ultimately what we want, is all runners, you know, but there is a problem, and we're here to address it. And it's been challenging, but beautiful, kind of, 5 months that we've been going. We continue to grow. With the support that we've been shown has been phenomenal, and, you know, words from our community such as "I belong here," you know, or "this is us," or, you know, "I'm so," you know, you see people with Black trail runners t-shirt with "Representation Matters" on the back, and they're wearing them all over the world, and it's mind-blowing. But it makes the hard work, because we're all volunteers, it just makes the hard work worthwhile. And I want a better, you know, you're having a baby next year, I want a better world, a more equality in the world, more equity. And I want my kids to grow up, and if they get into trail running, I want them to be surrounded by a more diverse community.
Definitely.
And without organizations like Black Trail Runners doing their thing, and, you know, Asian runners, etc., etc., then it won't happen. So we have to play our part, and that's, you know, that's life's work.
Yeah. And it's, do you know what, it's actually, organizations like this make it easier for people like me. I'm in the media, I've edited trail running for 7 years, and I always like to be diverse. I was really successful in terms of shapes and sizes of runners and of ages of runners, but where I really struggled was getting people of different colors in my photo shoots. And I was actively looking for those people, but I would have to like judge person by person. How is this person going to take it if I say, look, I only know kind of 10 Asian people who trail run. It's really important. Can you be free on this day to come run? Because otherwise you're not represented. And that was really awkward conversation for me to have to have. So now that you guys are having an organization of yourselves where you know you want to represent, then I'm like, oh, great. This is a wonderful set of contacts for me to just dive into and go, oh, hey, guys, like, can someone come along and represent, please? Because it's not an issue anymore. I used to have to tiptoe around it a bit, and I didn't know how one runner was going to take it from runner to runner. And I actually, like, there was this one guy in a restaurant where I work, actually, and he just looked like a runner. He looked like a lean, like, beautiful bodied lean young man, and I was like, oh, hey, are you a runner? Like that, because we were on a work night out, and he got really offended, and he was like, are you asking me that because I'm black? And I was like, well, no, I'm asking you it because you look like a runner, and I'm always searching for diversity, and I would love you to come to a photo shoot. And but he did not take that well, and I think it's great for people like me who have been trying to suddenly have this pool of people who are now, like, we're both trying together now, and I don't have to sort of read the room in the same way as I used to. It's not as offensive.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point that you've raised, because I know that it's uncomfortable. We understand that it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable knowing how to address the subject of the lack of diversity in trail running. It's uncomfortable to have conversations, you know, with strangers or even with family about racism, about representation. You know, it's uncomfortable. But, you know, it's a conversation. These conversations, you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't mind talking about it at all. Like,
you know, because those,
my best friend is from Sri Lanka. Like, I grew up surrounded by people who are Asian origin. Like, I definitely see color. Yeah. But I like to see colour. I find it boring if everybody's all white and pasty like me. So, like, honestly, we just need so much sun cream. It's just,
you know, it's just, I think it's just, it's, you've hit the nail on the head. I think there's a fear of saying the wrong thing, a fear of coming across the wrong way. But what we say is, let's have the conversation, and if we can do something together which addresses one of our three tenets that will ultimately enable more black people to feel safe, to feel supported in trail running, then that's win-win, because you're getting what you need in order to become more representative in your media, and we're getting what we need in terms of working with partners such as yourself, but also showcasing the variety of talent that is out there, and therefore someone who maybe is a road runner at the moment but would love to have a go on the trails is hearing that or seeing it, and they're like, wow, like, that's somebody that looks like me.
Yeah, it's so,
you know,
important,
where do I go
it?
To get more.
Yeah, and I just, there's a couple of questions here, just if you've got time, from patrons that are really interesting questions, I thought, because so Craig Webb, he wants your thoughts basically on the fact that black runners, they really dominate in racing marathon distances on the road and under, you know, like on the track and everything like that, but there's very few that, what we've seen in the stats that you've just mentioned, that go into trail and ultra distance running. And he said, imagine if Kipchoge chose to do like a 50k mountain race, like, imagine. So yeah, like, it's obvious that black people are incredible runners. So yeah, why are they incredible runners on the road and the track, but they don't come into trail running? What are the barriers that you think?
I think what you've got to understand about road runners like Kipchoge and the Kenyans and Ethiopians and stuff is that is their job. So they are, you know, from a very early age, you know, one of the, and it's a racist trope to say that, you know, the reason that these runners from Kenya are so good is because they, you know, they ran to school barefoot. You know, there's a great book which I would recommend anyone reads. I did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago by Adam Rutherford, called How to Talk to a Racist.
Is that Adam Rutherford? He does the science or the history?
Yes,
the science programs.
This is my perimenopause. Yeah, I think it's called How to Talk to a Racist.
Okay.
And so what you've got to understand about those marathon runners is that that's their job. So that's the way that they provide for themselves and for their families and for
their
community.
Their financial, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a system over there. You know, they're looking to create great half marathon and marathon runners at these camps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, another great book in which he explains it really, really well is The Rise of the Ultra Runner, Anne Harrod Pink.
Sebastian Schoenbeck mentioned that book in the live chat. Yeah.
So basically, Anne Harrod talks about the same thing. You know, why are there such good black marathon runners and it doesn't translate to ultra running? And so therefore he works with a couple of black athletes, and I think they try out Wendover Woods 50, and after the first lap the black athlete he's working with pulls out. He pulls out because I think there's a slight pain in his foot. Now what you've got to understand is that these runners, if they get injured, that's the end for them. Like there's no income, there's no travel, they'd probably be dropped by sponsors, probably be dropped by their coaches. They have so much to lose, and because ultra running is uncharted territory, they would rather stay in marathon where they know that they can earn the money rather than go to ultra marathon. You know, ultra marathon, really, in terms of the rewards, etc., nowhere near the financial rewards. So there's so much financially involved in it from a careering runner perspective that those are the blocks. If you go out and you put some of these ultra races with bigger money to kind of rival the kind of marathons, you would see more black elite runners transitioning from road running to trail running. It's not there at the moment. It might be as ultra running and as trail running becomes more commercialized, etc., etc., but that's, in my belief, that's the reason it doesn't translate. And Anne Harrod Finn in that book explains that kind of almost experiment that he did really well, because it's a question people do say, well, black runners are, so you know, they're taking all of the you know, Olympic medals and world records, etc., why doesn't that translate? It doesn't translate because there's the fear that if these people go out and train and get injured, they won't even make the race. So therefore it's kind of like stick with kind of what you know you're good at rather than going into that chartered territory. We want to see more elite black ultra trail runners, and that is something that, you know, we're working on. You know, we're working with the likes of Ian, we're going to be starting to work with the likes of Ian Sharman to basically kind of launch a bit of a kind of academy in terms of some black trail runners that we have that show potential, that could really be nurtured, you know, really be kind of elite athletes. But that takes time, you know, takes time. But I think, you know, I've answered that question as well as I can, and I really would, you know, I like the book The Rise of the Ultra Runners, because it's all about ultra running, and it's all about
it is a great book. It's a fantastic book. We just got a couple more questions from Guy Greatrex, who's really keen to know more about the Black Trail Runners. He said, have you found, since starting up the group, have you found that more people of colour are taking up trail running? I think you've basically said yes to this along the way.
I mean, taking up trail running, going to races they wouldn't normally go to, being vocal about the reasons that they love trail running. You know, we are, black trail runners are for everyone, whether you're a novice, whether you've never run before, or whether you've run on the road, whether you're 5K or ultra marathon. Like, black trail runners is for everyone, and we try and incorporate this into everything that we do. So we never assume that people know, like, terminology we use, etc., etc. In our A to Z of trail running that we do on the Checkpoint podcast, we're at F for the next one. So we're always like, what Fs do you want to know about? You know, because we'll talk about FKTs. Somebody doesn't even know. Some people don't have any idea what an FKT is. And we like talk about it as if it's like a cup of tea. Like, of course you know. So it's for everyone. And we've certainly seen more enthusiasm to go and try races and events that people would never have tried before had they not had the kind of community support around them. And that's beautiful. And that's what we want, and what we're aiming for with 21 in 21 as well.
Yeah. And you're working with Innovate a bit as well, aren't you? Guy says, as a company, do you think Innovate are doing their part in showing and, like, encouraging diversity in the sport?
I think that I had, certainly when, because I'm coached by Damien Hall, and when we launched Black Trail Runners, I wanted to speak to brands that I bought into about what they were doing in order to tackle the issue around diversity. And I had a really great, frank, honest conversation with with one of the directors at Innovate, and talked about what I saw, talked about kind of images that they used on their website, talked about what they were doing as a company to encourage more people of color to be contributors or you know, and I really, really liked their honest approach in terms of what they didn't know and what they wanted to do but didn't know how to do it. So I agreed that I would become an ambassador for them because, first and foremost, I really, really like their kit for trail running. Like, their kit works for me. Secondly, because Damien is an athlete with them, and he was my coach, and we're having spoke to Damien about the stuff that he'd done with them around the environment. They seem very switched on in terms of like moral kind of ethical issues.
They're really good like that.
And part of the work with them is to, you know, they support Black Trail Runners, they support us with initiatives like last night's navigation, you know, event that was via contacts that they had, so we were able to put that on for free for our members. You know, they're the photos that, you know, I did a shoot with them up in the Lake District.
I spent with Paul
and Nikki, and those are, they're my, like, my running, like my ultra running, like Nikki Spinks is like, bow down, you know, and I just to be in the same, on the same mountain as her, to have time with her, to have time with Paul, and to learn from them, to learn skills. Like, Paul taught me, like, I was talking about running downhill, and he was just giving, because he's a coach, he was giving me tips as how to run downhill on stone, slippery stone, and I'm like, this is stuff that I can give back to people, like at the Black Trail Runners Taster Day in January, you know. And so I'm really, really proud to be associated with them and to help them work out their policy and their, how that they can encourage more Black people via the representation and the marketing and all of the stuff that they do. Because, you know, the Lakes are where Innovate are based, and that whole area is somewhere that I want to spend more time myself. I've been asked to help a woman runner in, she's planning the first female only supported BGR next year. So, you know, these are just opportunities to really promote and represent, and show people, like, you can be what you can see, you know. So I'm really happy to work with Innovate in order to continue to do that.
Yeah, you're totally trailblazing. It's amazing the work that you're doing. It's hard work, but it's amazing. And Guy just finishes with one final question, if you've got time. We as a community of trail runners, like obviously we're not doing enough right now, but what are the main things that everybody can be doing to change the situation and make things more diverse, not just for Black trail runners, but Asian, Chinese, anybody who wants to come and do trail running? What in your opinion should we all be doing?
I think, you know, the really easy thing that you can do is that if you're in an event, if you're at a race, if you are on a website looking for a race, look, just take a moment just to look around you. Do you see people of color? And if you don't, the easiest thing you can do is, when you're at the race picking up your registration, or when you're email, you send an email and say, you know, what are you doing to encourage more people of color into trail running? It's a question, because ultimately, as a community, we're the stakeholders. Races need us to buy entries, to do training camps, to buy kit. Brand need us to buy kit. If you, just the simple thing to do is look around you, and if you don't see people of color, or you don't feel you see enough people of color represented, ask those people that are in charge why. What are you doing to encourage more people of color into our sport that we love so much and that you're putting on these events for? Because I don't necessarily see them here, you know. And the second thing is, you know, if you're out at an event and you see a person of colour, you know, talk to them, you know. Talk about your race, talk about what you're planning, talk about their race. You know, we were at Maverick a couple of weeks ago and a few of us had Black Trail Runners t-shirts on. And I was a bit saddened because nobody kind of acknowledged, like when they were running past, you know, we had big representation matters on the back. You know, there wasn't even go Black Trail Run, you know. But you can say that, like, you're not going to offend us. Like, you know, don't be scared to talk. Don't be scared to kind of big us up. Don't be scared to ask questions. That's part of the work, is to have those conversations. So those are two really, really easy things that you can do.
Yeah, I think people are a bit scared to mention stuff like that because they're like, oh, well, we've been taught for so many years you shouldn't really distinguish between people of different colours, you know, be colourblind in the nicest possible way. And so you don't know if everybody who is black wants to be suddenly talked to just because they're black, kind of thing. But if you're obviously representing with the Black Trail Runners t-shirt on, then obviously you're up for that. So that is a really good thing for everybody who's not black to know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that, and I think it's ultimately what you've said quite a few times, is it comes down to this fear of no, not every black person might want to be talked to. But I think certainly, you know, if you're at an event and you're just a runner talking to another runner, you know, and if you're at an event where there are black trail runners there and you know we've got the Representation Matters t-shirt on, then talk to us about black trail runners, talk to us about what we're doing, talk to us about what we think, you know, we're there, we're representing, and that's part, you know, that's part of the work, is the communication and making that conversation, which can be uncomfortable, more comfortable for both parties.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable talking about anything, like, because I make films and things like that, and I do journalism. The moment I see a black or a brown person at a trail race, I'm like, quick, I need to interview that person to represent different colours of people in my film. But I have had a couple of black or Asian people go, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm a bit shy, like, I don't really want to be interviewed by you. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's cool, I just really wanted to represent you, sorry.
And that's fine, because everyone, you know, what I say is everyone has their own story and everyone has their own journey and their own traumas, and you could be black, white, whatever it might be. And there are people that are uncomfortable are uncomfortable to talk about their experiences, are uncomfortable to feel as though the spotlight's on them. And that's absolutely fine, and that's their choice. But I think the thing about organisations like Black Trail Runners is that we're a conduit into knowing people or knowing individuals who are happy to share their lived experience or happy to share their experience on the trails in a safe way, you know. Yeah. So kind of knowing how it's going to be used, you know, knowing that, you know, the picture that they've taken, you know, that it's not that, you know, some photographer's not going to turn around and say, well, that's, you know. So it's just little things like that. And I think that organizations like BTR are kind of accessible for, as you say, kind of people in media especially, in order to work with us to help to facilitate that change. I think it's working in association, working in support of and with us to facilitate that change. It's a job. It's probably going to be life's work. It will be life's work, but it's worthy work.
Yeah, it's incredible work, and it's opening up a whole host of opportunities for you, as you've already seen, which is amazing. I'm really pleased that you've set up the group. I think it's fantastic, and I'm really blessed, very grateful that you've let me in, because I'm not black, obviously, so I'm like the furthest from black one person could ever be, and I'm just really grateful that you've let me in there, and I can chat with everybody, and if I'm doing a photo shoot, I can be like, hey guys, who wants to come, this would be amazing. So yeah, it makes my job a lot easier, so yeah, thank you. It's a really great group, and I love seeing everyone's posts as well in that, just from a runner's point of view. It doesn't matter what colour you you are. I like to see them, whatever you're doing.
It's a beautiful thing. It's something that I'm really, really proud to be part of.
I love the t-shirts as well. It's a good design.
Yeah.
Simple, but effective.
We're getting more merchandise because people are just asking for it.
But am I allowed to wear a Black Trail Runners t-shirt? Like, are non-black people allowed to wear them?
Yeah. Representation matters. You know, people will ask you questions. If you're a white person in a Black Trail Runners t-shirt, people will say, how come you're wearing a Black Trail Runners t-shirt? And, you know, you're a white person, you're an ally. You know, it's about communicating the message that representation does matter and enabling more black people to feel that there is a place for them here in trail running. You know, white allies are welcome, you know, and together we will stamp out racism globally. It has to be, you know, it has to be a joint effort because we need help to do this work. Absolutely. Yeah. Black Trail Runners, if you want a t-shirt, have a t-shirt.
Awesome. Amazing. Oh, and you can have a Wild Ginger Running t-shirt.
Thank you.
We'll swap. Awesome. Oh, fantastic. Well, it's been so great to chat to you tonight, Sabrina. I just want to say a massive thank you on behalf of everybody watching. Everybody's had some really, like, there's been some really interesting questions asked, and I feel like we've covered a few things that I was like, oh, I don't know about this and that. And so hopefully that's ironed out a few things for people to hear tonight as well. Finally, in a nutshell, what are you up to next and how can everybody follow what you're doing?
Oh, well, the best place to follow me, please come and join my Instagram community. I love all my followers. They're so lovely. And I'm really, really honest on Instagram. So, you know, there's none of this, oh, my life is perfect, because it's really not. It's really not. But I'm at Sab Runs Miles or Sab Run Smiles.
Yeah, I thought it was Smiles. Yeah.
On Instagram. So that's probably the best place to contact, to keep up with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. In terms of racing, I'm in a, every winter I go into just a fast marathon training plan because I find that going into that in the spring sets me up for running faster ultras. So I'm doing a marathon in March, so I'm training for that at the moment, and then I'm doing the Ramsey Round in June.
Are you? Incredible.
Yeah. So we're hoping to get a Black Trail Runners team to go do that.
Are you filming it at all?
Yes, we're hoping that we can get it filmed. We're going to be talking to Innovate about that as well.
Fantastic, yeah.
And then I'm doing Val d'Arane, one of the UTMB races in July. That's 101K around the Pyrenees. I'm doing the Isle of Wight Challenge, Trail Running Challenge, 100K in one go. And then, we're going back to Ultra X England as an even bigger Black Trail Runners team in September.
Oh, wow. Hopefully I can come to one of these things and meet you all.
Yeah, I really hope you
It'd be really lovely. Yeah.
And I've had a book deal. So I'm writing a book. Yeah.
What's the book about? You mentioned it briefly earlier.
The book is about, it's a collection of stories about a kind of bit of a memoir of my life. So I grew up in a rural town, and so it talks about my experiences of rural racism, but also how running has helped me to process and to deal with the trauma surrounding that. So if you're a runner, you'll love it.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about what it is to grow up in the UK, especially in rural UK as a black, you know, as a mixed race person, racialized as black, you'll love it. But it's stories of tragedy, but of triumph and running in the face of rural racism. So I'm really, it's a lot of work, and it's very hard. You know, you've just written a book. You know, it's for me.
It sounds a bit easier than your book. It's not about me. Like, I wouldn't write a book about me.
I'm more of a visual storyteller. So actually sitting down and really taking yourself back to some of these experiences has been mentally challenging challenging.
But I believe it's also cathartic in a way as well. Has it been like a bit of therapy? Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. And it just makes me realise how my life has changed this year with the activism and Black Trail Runners and everything like that. But this is part of my part of my story, part of my journey. And if I only ever write one book, this is the book I want to write. So
amazing.
That will be out next June, early June.
Next June. So that's 2022.
No, 2021.
2021. Oh, okay. You're further along with it than I thought. Yes, brilliant. Ah, that's fantastic. So June 2021. Okay, well, we'll have to get one for a competition prize on Wild Ginger Running.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And yeah, I'd love to talk to you more about it when it comes out. Yeah, we've covered some of the stuff in there. I mean, MDS is one of the challenges and one of the chapters. And actually, I talk about the long stage because that was a journey
long
stage in the MDS. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but it's all good stuff and stuff that is meant to happen at the time it's happening.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. It's just brilliant. And I'm really glad that we can follow you further. You're doing tons of stuff in 2021. Fingers crossed, hey. And the book is just the icing on the cake. So I'm really pleased about that. That's awesome. I just want to read out a couple of comments from a couple of people have just said thank you so much for tonight because it's really cleared some things up for them. So Seb over in Germany, he says, thanks a lot, Sabrina. This really cleared some things up for me. Yep, I pretty much just said that. and Arlene M says thanks as well. She's listening from the USA. And she says, most non-elite runners don't run trails to compete but to enjoy nature, so she's looking forward to more black people in the non-elite regions as well. Just the whole grassroots thing I think is really resonating with everybody here tonight. So yeah, so thank you so much. Everybody's really enjoyed it and it's just really great to have an open and honest conversation about things that are affecting everybody in our lifetime. So thank you for that and good luck with everything in 2021.
Thank you so much, Claire. Really enjoyed being on with you. Thanks so much.
Hi, it's Claire here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These live chats take place every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. UK time on Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. And the link is in the show notes. I just wanted to let you know that you can find this and loads more advice and inspiration and gear tests all about trail and ultra running on my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running. There are training tips, advice from elite athletes, top coaches, nutritious recipes, key exercises, injury prevention information, and tons of trail kit reviewed, from running packs to poles, waterproofs to head torches, GPS watches, and shoes, and did I mention shoes? I've been going for a few years now, so there's a huge archive of content to help you out with your trail and ultra running. To quickly and easily find the information you need, simply type your query into the Google search box and then write Wild Ginger Running after it. Then Google will show you whatever blog posts or films I have on that topic. Give it a try. And if you appreciate listening and all the information I share on YouTube, you're also very welcome to support me on Patreon, which gets you some additional excellent perks and the chance to win some awesome prizes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee every month, patrons get discounts, extra films, access to the exclusive Facebook and Strava groups, the chance to ask questions to every live chat guest, plus automatic entry into my monthly competition to win £400 worth of trail and ultra running gear. There are only about 150 patrons, so the odds on a win are way better than the lottery. Interested? Find me at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Thanks for listening, guys. Have fun, enjoy your run, and I'll see you on the trails.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.